Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Now you want the headphones up.
Yeah, I can't hear anything. Can you hear me?
Bill is high maintenance today.
Sounds like my mic is dead. There you go. That's better.
Yeah, we're back. We never test this ahead of time.
I know. What's
today's like the only day we've done it, and we did it wrong. It's better when we do it on the fly. All that planning and everything screwed up. So you can find everything about the program today and previous programs for the last, I don't know, I think 2010? Back to 2010?
2010.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Seems like we have
been a while.
I guess we've been doing this a while. You can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Back when Bill was getting his coffee.
That's right. That was the coffee boy.
Back when Bill was the coffee boy. So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
The coffee boy.
And I'm Bob Martin.
He's not the coffee
boy. And we have Joe Gazzardi with us today.
And we also have a sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
We need to talk
Sorry, Joe. One more second.
We want to thank our sponsor for this hour.
No, you want those sponsors in there.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Powerhouse Solar. They'll do all your solar outfitting from heated pools to cooling your house. You name it, they'll put some electricity in your house for free. Okay. Well, the electricity will be free.
And today, while walking the dog, it was 85.
Yeah, it's going to get
hot.
What
the heck?
It's going to get hot. Those power bills are going to start going up, folks.
I know. Fort Jones, Thursday night was 38 degrees, and today it's 85.
Those days are over. Yeah, so give them a call over there at Powerhouse Solar, 530-275-5600, or get them on the web at powerhousesolar.com. Good folks to work with, been around a long time. They'll do you a great job.
There you go. So today we're talking about immigration. We're going to get an update from Joe Gazzardi, who's the National Media Director for Californians for Population Stabilization. It's CAPS, CAPS. And he's been doing this a long time. It says here you have 28 years of experience, but I stole that from last year's show. So I'm thinking that was probably old then.
Yeah, geez, it's been almost 30 years plugging it out on immigration.
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, you know, with everything that's going on nationally and in the state of California, and I mean, we have people who listen all over the place, but if you were going to look at the country and then zoom in on a place where immigration is a huge issue and you're going to pick one of the 50 states, I think I'd pick California.
Although I did hear the other day that
somebody else
when they were talking about the wall, that California was the state that really didn't need a wall.
Yeah, no, we don't need
Although I did talk to people that just came from San Diego, and I mean, they had people running down the street that looked like they just crossed the border on foot. So,
are you kidding?
No.
In San Diego?
No, sitting in a cafe, and there were people actually running by being chased by ICE. So, yeah, we don't need a wall.
So, Joe, just give us a little spoiler alert. Are we going to need blood pressure medication today?
Well, whenever you're talking about California and
that's true.
Immigration.
Or anything.
It's always, yes, it's blood pressure time for sure. But, you know, in the introduction, I was listening to you guys talking about your show having been on the air since 2010. And I tried to do a quick check of where the nation is, was in 2010, on immigration versus where it is today on immigration. And it's interesting because, you know, 2010, of course, Barack Obama was in his, second year. And as I recall, you know, immigration wasn't that big of a deal for him early on. He was all about getting his, Affordable Care Act passed, and he came apart on immigration totally in his second term. So, you know, we're better off with Trump, although I think it's safe to say that some of his early actions on immigration have been disappointing.
Well, I think, too, he's in office now, and he's learning that it's not as easy as it seemed from the outside looking in. He's getting an education.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
No doubt. And he's getting the predictable resistance from the congressional Democrats and the disappointing resistance from a lot of congressional Republicans. So it's hard for him to move forward. We all of us involved in common sense immigration goals are disappointed that he doesn't take on the easier tasks and insists on doing the things that are obviously going to be more challenging, like the wall. In other words, how about a full court press on E-Verify?
Yeah.
Or why did you cave without getting anything in return on DACA? And why would you go after the wall instead of either one of those two much easier to attain goals?
Well, I think the wall was a big issue because he talked so much about that during the campaign. I think
maybe he was feeling
some heat there that he needs to keep that on the front burner, don't you think?
No doubt. I mean, no doubt. He did talk about that incessantly during the campaign. But what I get back to then is kind of, well, okay, we're in a little bit of a holding pattern on the wall, because that's what he's wanting you to believe, that he can make some advances later on in the year or in the new fiscal year. But I can't deliver the wall to you right now, but I can deliver for you on DACA. So I got rid of DACA. There aren't going to be any more work permits issued. There aren't going to be any renewals of the existing work permits. And we're in full court press mode on E-Verify, which is going to ensure that only American citizens and legal permanent residents get jobs. So on DACA, he caved in completely. And I haven't heard a peep out of E-Verify in I don't know how long.
How hard did that be to do? I mean, just...
Oh, my God, that's easy. I mean, that is really easy because, first of all, E-Verify has already passed the House Judiciary Committee twice.
Okay.
Not since Trump was a president, but in the houses that were controlled by John Boehner and Paul Ryan, E-Verify passed on two separate occasions. So what E-Verify... Once it gets through the Judiciary Committee and once it gets through the full House, which it certainly would, then if the Democrats want to shoot it down, they're forced into a position where they have to say, well, as far as we're concerned, whether illegal immigrants get jobs or American citizens get jobs, it doesn't matter to us. We're okay with it. Now, you know, that's an untenable position, especially as the 2018 midterm elections come up, and where there are 10 senators that will be up for a re-election in states that Trump won by 10 or more points. So, Aaron, to answer your question, that would be something that is easily done, or at least easy compared to some of the other things that Trump has said he wants to get done.
And I get the idea. I mean, I understand the concept of E-Verify. For those people who don't, or who, you know, don't live in the U.S. or whatever that are listening, can you give them sort of a thumbnail sketch on E-Verify? And let me check real quick. Bob, are we up for a break at this point?
Sorry, we can take one anytime, yes.
All righty. You know what, Joe? Let's take a real quick break here. And then when we come back, maybe you could do sort of a thumbnail sketch on E-Verify, because I think it's important people understand what it is, what it isn't.
Good idea.
And how it works.
Good. Yeah, and also from the employer standpoint, what qualifications they have to submit to.
Yeah, do they have to buy machinery or equipment? Do they have to have a special reader? Anyway.
All right, good idea.
Okay, so we'll do E-Verify 101 when we come right back. We're here with Joe Gazzardi today from CAPS, the Californians for Population Stabilization.
Easy for you to say.
I thought I was going to start coughing. I almost choked on CAPS. That's bad.
That is bad.
That's bad.
Hopefully not bottle caps.
No, so we'll be right back with Joe. Going to learn all about immigration today.
Soul, then it's just your body, then they go, read the writing on the wall.
What wall?
Today is a sunny day, though. Got
it
that
is.
Part right.
It is. Got that part right.
It was a long time ago, too. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining We the People. We're on here with Joe Gazzardi. And, you know, Joe, I was looking at it. You were on here April 17th of last year.
You're our, almost a year exactly.
Yeah, I know. I looked that up. I was like, you're our annual April guest. A lot has happened in a year, though. Wow. So what's the skinny on this E-Verify deal?
All right. Well, it's a great question, and I can give you a simple answer from my own firsthand knowledge. I am an E-Verified employee. So the way that it works is that within 3 days of an employee being hired, you have to be hired. Before an E-Verify application can be processed. So within 3 days, you submit to your employer all of your data, all of your I-9 information, and that data is cross-checked against Social Security records and Department of Homeland Security records. So it verifies whether or not the Social Security number is valid, or whether or not there might be any immigration holds or anything of that, anything immigration related on the applicant. Now, the reason there's a 3-day hold, the reason that you must be employed first is because the people who wrote the E-Verify legislation didn't want anybody to claim that there was a bias in the hiring process and that they were discriminating against Hispanics or blacks or anything like that to deny minorities a job. So first you're hired, then you go through the E-Verify check. My background check took less than 3 minutes. It was done by a person already on the staff. There's no need for employers to go out and hire new people. It's accomplished in a matter of minutes. In fact, your listeners can go on to the E-Verify website at any time and do their own self-check just to see whether or not, just to see how long it takes, I should say, how little time it takes. And also, it's not a bad idea to do it in case there's any misinformation on your applications. You can get it cleared up before you're actually E-Verified after being hired.
Okay, so the question that immediately pops up in my mind, Joe, is I'm an employer. I hire somebody. They fill out their paperwork, give it to me. I send it in. Now, you said it gets cross-checked with Social Security. Lots of folks in this country have phony Social Security numbers that are good numbers, but they're not, I guess, legal Social Security folks.
Right.
And the second thing is Homeland Security. Well, if you ran my name against Homeland Security, I doubt if anything would come up. And if somebody
you don't know that.
Well, if somebody jumps the border, I guess if they overstay a work visa, they're going to pop up maybe in Homeland Security if they cross, verify
records. Well, that should pop up, definitely. Yeah.
Okay,
definitely.
Well, what if I don't have a work visa? What if I came here illegally? I got a phony Social Security number. It's not going to come up on Homeland Security check.
In California.
Well, what would come up is that your name would not be attached to that Social Security number.
Yeah. If you actually.
So that's how you would be ferreted out. You say, well, listen, you're telling me that your name is such and such, but this Social Security number belongs to somebody else.
But aren't they getting Social Security numbers with their own name on them, though? Aren't they actually applying for Social Security numbers? I don't know what the system is, but can an illegal get a Social Security number?
Legal. No.
No.
They can't.
Uh-uh. You have to steal somebody else.
And so if they illegally obtain a Social Security number, that number isn't attached to their name?
Well, that, you know, that's where the checking comes in. The name has to correspond with the number. So either, I mean, if the number is completely bogus and therefore not in the Social Security system,
yeah, that's
then
gonna
that's
pop
the first
up.
Red flag.
Okay. All right.
And this is all
the,
something.
And if the name doesn't, you know, if the reverse is true with the fake name that's not attached to the to a valid Social Security number, then that's also a red flag.
So they, what if they steal somebody's Social Security number and use that name on their application?
Well, then there would be further checks. That would trigger a response from the employer, a red flag from the system that would cause a further check to be generated by the E-Verify people.
Right, because Social Security is not the only thing you have to provide when you go to look for work. And the driver's licenses, tell me, I know in California they started giving illegal aliens driver's licenses, but are they, like people under 21, are the license, do they look different? Do they have a marking on them?
The driver's licenses in California have a very tiny marking on them that indicate that they are not for federal purposes such as work, entering federal buildings or for employment purposes or for boarding airlines. But there's been quite a bit of dispute about just how rigorous the checking for those restrictions actually are. But technically, those driver's licenses are for driving only.
But if they ran that through E-Verify, that would pop up. We would think that DMV would have kept a record that.
Well, yeah, that
they
was
were
another question
citizens.
I had. Do other government agencies? I mean, are they now, cross-checking information with, say, Homeland Security runs a check? Are they? Do they have access to, you know, like the FBI, NSA? California, like state records? I mean, does any of that come into play, or is it just...
Well, E-Verify wouldn't get into... I mean, FBI doesn't have a role in E-Verify at all.
Okay.
So
you're asking if there's other... The only agencies that are involved in E-Verify and in work authorization verification are Social Security and the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay.
So an employer can do that using the web. They don't need a special machine or have special cards.
It's all on the web, and it's all free, and it's been extremely popular and efficient. It's been efficient both in the sense of when people are confirmed. I think the automatically confirmed rate is about close to 99%. But it's also been effective in the sense that a lot of people who know they can't get through an E-Verify check don't apply for work. Mm. So if an employer says,
sure.
Look, I'm an E-Verified employer. I mean, Costco, just to take an example that everybody knows. Costco's an E-Verified employer. So if you're thinking about working for Costco and you know that they're going to E-Verify you, it's very unlikely that you're going to apply there.
Okay. Now, what is the... as an employer, what am I required or mandated to do if, I heard that they have, you have to give them access to your employment records or your payroll records or some, if they're checking up, if you're an E-Verify employer, do you have to, hand over those records to Homeland Security?
You mean,
or
like there might be some kind of an investigation of your own record keeping or something
yes.
of that nature?
Yes.
Not that I'm aware of at all, no.
Okay.
No.
So there's no... Early
on in E-Verify, there was a lot of misinformation about there because the activists on the other side were, they were very worried about mandatory E-Verify, so they came out with a lot of arguments about how you would have to hire several new employees and how complex it was and how costly it was and how racist it was and so on and so forth. So certainly it's possible that one of the arguments that they made was, hey, once you sign up for E-Verify, IRS is going to be all over you for your past work record, the past records of your employees. But that just isn't the case at all.
Okay. No, and there's some really, I don't spend a lot of time looking at this sort of thing. So I went to the E-Verify website, and there's a really good Q&A section. They've got information for employers, employees. So
if E-Verify becomes law, then all employers would be required to use the E-Verify system? Is that
another great question? There have been in the various years that E-Verify has been kicked around and rewritten and so forth, what has come up is different versions, one of which included, for example, all employers are going to have to use it, and you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to implement it within 2 years. But then there was another version that said, okay, all employers, unless you're in the agriculture industry, we'll cut you a little extra break, and we'll make your timeline 3 years. And then there was a version that came out which said, okay, well, we're going to make E-Verify mandatory for new hires. And then somebody else suggested, well, as long as we're going through all the trouble, let's require that all existing employees have to go through E-Verify, and if it's found out that you're not legally authorized to work, you would be subject to losing your job. I mean, according to the Pew Hispanic Center, there's like 8 million illegal immigrants employed in non-agriculture jobs.
Right.
So somebody in Congress, I can't remember who it was, said, well, wait a minute, if we're going to be doing E-Verify, why don't we make it wider reaching?
Okay, so that was really kind of where I was going with this is, okay, so if they require employers to use E-Verify, and I'm a farmer. I got thousands of acres, and I hire a lot of manual labor. And I don't want to E-Verify these guys because I know they're not going to pass.
Right.
How is that enforced?
Well, I think that was the idea behind a more generous system for people in the agriculture business. What they're going to say is, okay, you've got 3 years to figure out what your recruiting needs are and how to go about it. I mean, 3 years in the corporate world to do your forecasting and your planning for your
right.
manpower needs.
Yeah, I get that part, but what I'm saying is, you've got folks out there that are saying, I'm never going to E-Verify. I don't care if they do make it a law. I'm not going to do it. How is does the government then going to have the right to come onto your site and say, hey, have all these people been E-Verified? And if so, show me. I mean,
you have to have that paperwork.
The government definitely would have the right to do it, and there have been incidents.
There have been incidents where
there have been moments of silence.
Yes,
the where people
cone
were cut
of silence
and
just fell down. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. So now the government does have the right to come in.
No, it's the same as it is now. You can't just you have to fill out all that paperwork when
right.
you start a job. Well, that there's a reason for that. You don't get to just willy nilly do whatever you want.
I mean,
there
are other things that the ag people could do. For one thing, there's a existing visa, the H-2B visa, which allows agricultural workers to come into the United States legally.
Right.
There's that.
Sure.
There's the possibility that the farmers, instead of insisting that they have to have more cheap labor every single year, might begin to more seriously explore mechanization. That's an option, too. So,
well, that Pew study, if we're talking about the same one, that Pew study showed that only 4% of illegal immigrants work in forestry, farming, and mining.
That was surprising.
I was super surprised, and that was a really, really detailed.
It was surprising to some people, but when you've been studying immigration for 30 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't overwhelming.
I think the public conception is there's a lot of illegal workers in ag.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, let's talk a little bit more about some of these situations where the farmers want more illegal immigrant labor, and then they come, let's say, to California, and once they get settled into California, they're not going to go home. You know, in California,
sure, yeah,
they've got
absolutely.
Education, which all of the other states do, but they've got education. They can get driver's licenses. They
right.
Have the
there's no incentive to... There's no incentive to return. We need to take a really quick break, and we'll be...
And then they stick around, and...
Let's hit this on the other side of the break, Joe.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll have all the breaks at the top of the hour, which...
Okay.
So terrible. Anyway, we're talking to Joe Gazzardi. Obviously, there is a lot going on in the land of immigration, regardless of where you live. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I worked on a huge ranch down in the valley that employed, 150 people. And there was a fairly large contingent of illegal workers. I mean, everybody did it. And immigration would come around. And I don't know how they did it, but they had a network. They'd get within 5 miles of that ranch, and it would turn into a ghost town. It's like, where'd everybody go? And then you'd see a green truck pull in the driveway, and you'd know where everybody went. It was really kind of funny. But, yeah, it was common. It was common knowledge.
And that was, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, it was back, I'm going to say,
yeah,
late
years.
70s, early Ooh. 80s. Yeah.
Feels a lot older than I thought.
Yeah, back in the day, we had the mules.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I think those were also back in the days when illegal immigrants from Mexico were transferred all the way back to the southern extent of the southern border of Mexico with Guatemala to make it much more difficult for them to cross over again.
I don't know. We had one fella. He was a great guy. Everybody loved this kid. And he was so busy clowning around all the time, he always got picked up. He didn't pay attention. And he held the record for getting back to work. And he got deported one time and was back to work in 3 days. That's how quickly he got back across the border. So it wasn't, and maybe back then it really wasn't patrolled like it is today, but it wasn't a problem going back and forth. In fact, they would intentionally get picked up around Christmas time when we shut down so they get a free trip back to home and spend Christmas with the holiday and with the family, and then they come back to work. It was very
creative.
Oh, it was.
So
it
for
was.
All the people who think immigration just became a problem, yeah.
Oh no, and it wasn't
for
a problem.
The border, I should say.
I mean, we depended on those folks. I mean, they were hard workers, and we needed them.
Right.
You know, so it was.
We
kind
didn't
of a
have all
world.
The extra bonus stuff we get now.
No.
Well, that's exactly right. If you look back over the from the time that Ronald Reagan's Immigration Reform and Control Act passed in 1986, there has really only been token enforcement of the immigration laws over those 30 years. And it came completely off the wheels in Obama's second term when virtually anything was accepted. Unaccompanied minors, prosecutorial discretion, DACA, more work-authorized, employment-based visas. And it just is at a point where really if Jeff Sessions hadn't come along and at least posed the threat of deporting people and have, you know, actually with some of these recent raids that have arrested dozens of people in L.A. and Houston and various other spots across the United States, it would still be going on. So now crossings, illegal crossings are down, depending upon who you listen to, maybe 40, 50, 60%.
Yeah, I heard the other day that it was like 76%. You know, 76% seemed like a pretty big number, but they said it was down that much just since Trump took office.
Yeah.
Could that be correct?
Right. So the message is from Sessions, and I guess more indirectly from Donald Trump, that look, we're going to enforce immigration laws. That is one thing that Trump does seem to be committed to, and you know, Sessions, I think on Thursday or on Friday, came out and said, in response to some statement about how ICE was picking up people that weren't guilty of any serious crimes and so on and so forth, Sessions said, look, if you're in the United States illegally, you are subject to deportation, period.
You know, period.
He didn't elaborate on it. He didn't give a long list of exceptions from that rule. He just said very simply, look, if you're in the United States illegally, you are subject to deportation. So that message gets to Mexico, gets to Central America, maybe beyond. That's a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because at this point, the DACA thing, deferred action for childhood arrivals. So those are kids who were brought here by parents who were coming here illegally.
Allegedly kids.
I think it went up to like
19 or something.
But I mean, that's what it's supposed to stand for. They aren't kids who came here by themselves most of the time. The ideological side says that their parents came here for a better life. They brought their kids and now the kids are here and they've grown up here. So what are we supposed to do with them? But in reality, we know that was abused by, obviously like anything else. Have you heard anything about what the plan is for that? Because those people are still here illegally.
The short term is very clear. Trump has said that he's not planning to do anything to change DACA, which in my mind means that, okay, this is an amnesty that President Obama originated, but that you, Donald Trump, now own. Because he could end DACA in less than 60 seconds. He picks up a pen, he writes a memorandum to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services and says, effective immediately, do not accept any more DACA applications, and effective immediately, do not process any more renewals. So he chose not to do that, and it looks like for at least the short term, they're going to keep on accepting new applications, which I think are something like 500 or 600 a week, something like that.
Wow!
But the bottom line,
process the renewals.
Right.
You know, those are work permits. That's 500 or 600 work permits every week that's going out to some person, which is going to enable him to enter the labor market and compete against U.S. citizens for an increasingly smaller number, lesser number of jobs. So I'd like to elaborate just a little bit on DACA in case your listeners don't have a complete picture of what happened. First of all, there was no face-to-face interviews for a DACA applicant. They submitted their applications. They were not subject to review. Nothing on the application was cross-checked. If a kid said, for example, that he went to high school in Los Angeles and has a diploma, nobody checked. If he said that he has a GED, nobody double-checked that. DACA applicants were allowed to have as many as three felonies on their record and still qualify.
What?
And a lot of those felonies had been pled down. I'm sorry, three misdemeanors.
But are they listing those felonies on their application?
Misdemeanors?
No. Yeah, right. No. So somebody is actually looking at the applications and seeing that there is a criminal record.
They were allowed to list as many as three misdemeanors.
Okay.
They could still qualify for DACA with as many as three misdemeanors on their record. So
okay.
That, if it was checked, was okay. But the question is, were the misdemeanors true misdemeanors, or were they crimes that had been pled down from felonies?
Right.
So there's that. And more to the point, almost, or as egregious as any of the things that I just said, if they worked, if any of these DACA holders had worked at any time in their lives in the United States, they were almost certainly guilty of identity theft because they had to have listed fake Social Security numbers.
Right.
So,
yeah, see, that's the part I don't understand is if they've been here for 20 years and, you know, they got an education and now they're working for some corporation and making $100,000 a year, how's that happen if they were illegal? They would have submitted false information at some point, correct?
Absolutely. I don't know whether you guys happen to catch this episode or not, but a few nights ago, early last week, Tucker Carlson interviewed a young woman.
Yes.
Who is an employee at Goldman Sachs.
Yes, I saw that interview.
The big-time investment banking firm. Apparently made several hundred thousand dollars a year. You know, he asked her, he said, well, did you, how did you get this job? What about your Social Security number? And she said, well, I used a random Social Security number. I didn't steal it from anybody. Well, she doesn't really know whether it happened to have been somebody else's active Social Security number or not. But even giving her the benefit of the doubt, and saying, okay, you used a random number that didn't belong to anybody else. It's a felony to falsify an application.
Well, wouldn't that have popped up as a bad number if anybody checked it?
Well, if they checked, it would. But,
yeah.
You know, that's really what we're talking about. Goldman Sachs, I'm going to guess now, they probably thought, you know, this is going to be great. We're going to have a more diverse workforce. Young woman from Mexico, looks like she's got... I believe went to the University of Texas, so she graduated from there.
Oh, very well-spoken young lady, yeah. I saw that interview, and I thought, well,
but,
there's a classic example
but, you know,
of somebody who came as a child and is now an adult, you know, holding down a really good job, but is still illegal.
Well, at the end
exactly. And the point is that employers like Goldman Sachs and God knows how many others across the United States – oh, well, you know, okay, a little identity fraud. But that's, you know, that's a huge crime. And if you have stolen somebody's identity and if you know anybody who's been a victim of identity theft, it's a terrible thing.
Well, besides that, I'm sorry, but people are working really hard to put their kids through college so that they can find, you know, decent jobs and support themselves, and there's one they're not going
right.
to get.
But what do you do?
I mean,
what do you do
crazy.
With somebody like that? I mean,
okay,
who's not a criminal? She ended up marrying an American citizen, and now she's a citizen. But, you know, what do you do? That's got to happen
news
a lot.
On that one.
Yeah.
All right, quick break, and then we'll be right back with Joe Gazzardi, and we're going to find out what can happen on that. Because now we're all mad. Okay, so we need 2 minutes. No coffee on the break, anybody.
Yeah, because I should have gone to work
for Goldman Sachs.
Coffee's not going to help
you. Coffee's not your friend today.
You're listening
to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Hey, you're pushing the button, Bob.
Yeah, Bob, you missed the button there.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. Yeah.
much. You got a juicy job at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out. That's all right.
This is the other side of the Tucker Carlson show. So, Joe, I was looking at your article on Trump's immigration policy, and let's see, the first quarter of fiscal year 2017, there were 114,327 new applications and renewals filed through the DACA program.
Okay.
So, that's a ton of people, and your article goes on to say between today and the end of 2019's first quarter, 750,000 DACA renewals will come due. What the heck? So this isn't like, you know.
Yeah, this is just a few folks.
This isn't just a few people that got caught in the...
Again, I mean, you have to look at this in terms of jobs. These are, we describe it as DACA permits being renewed, but really what they are is work permits. These are individuals who are now going to be authorized to work in the United States and are going to be able to compete with American kids and American workers and underemployed workers and the whole spectrum of people that are citizens that are trying to improve their lives. So
it's a terrible
failure on Trump's part.
Well, do you have any numbers on how many of those jobs? Because what I hear a lot is, well, these folks are all coming over here. They're working in the service industry. They're doing jobs that nobody wants to do over here.
Sure. And that's partially true, no doubt about it. But some of those service jobs would be really fantastic for homemaker who wants to increase the family income while the kids are away at school, work a few shifts at a restaurant, or people who are you leave California and you go to out in the Midwest and you stay at a hotel or a motel.
Right.
The people that are employed there as housekeepers, overwhelmingly Americans, right? So.
Oh, wow, that's interesting, because that's not the case here.
No, it's not the case here, but it is the case. It is the case elsewhere. So
interesting.
People, when you're hearing about DACA permits and DACA renewals, just remember that every single one of those is an employment authorization document, which means that this person who got from President Obama an illegal amnesty, really, protected from deportation and authorized to work as a, as a resident of as a legal resident of any of the 50 states can get a driver's license. So people need to realize that this is not some great act of compassion by Donald Trump. This is a direct assault on American workers. He's expanding the labor force, making it tougher for citizens to get jobs.
And right. It's not this 100-some thousand folks that got reauthorized to work doesn't mean that there were 100,000 jobs taken, because all of them aren't working, obviously.
No, they're not all working.
Right.
And if you're if you're like under this DACA renewal, could you be 10 years old? I mean, is that for like little kids too, or is that only for like
old? I'm not sure what the work laws are.
I hadn't really thought about it, but the DACA thing, I'm like, well, what about
underage
little kids that are here?
That could qualify for DACA,
by the way,
not necessarily.
Curious.
On the question of who's working and where they might be working, a few weeks ago, I had a call from a reporter who writes for Inc. magazine, I-N-C magazine.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it.
And the magazine covers developments in Silicon Valley, the latest happenings there, and he told me that a lot of these Silicon Valley guys are all worried. They were worried at that time about President Trump ending DACA. So not all of the DACA holders are in the service industry. Some of them are working in Silicon Valley at what are probably pretty good jobs.
Yeah, well, that Pew survey makes it really clear. The percentages were very striking, that they were working in professional positions and management positions in this country.
And just to return briefly to, I don't want to backtrack too much, but to get back to E-Verify, if Tucker Carlson's guest, Julissa, whatever her last name was, I can't remember, but if E-Verify had been in place when she went to apply at Goldman Sachs, she wouldn't have been working there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I heard, too, that a lot of the Silicon Valley folks are actually recruiting people to come over and signing them up under the DACA program to work. So, again, it's not just folks coming here looking for work. I mean,
who were little kids brought with their parents.
Right.
You know, and all this, at the end of the day, I mean, I can hear people in the background saying, oh, well, we have to have compassion. We're all immigrants and all that. Let's hit a little of that when we come back, Joe, and let's talk a little bit about what's really going on, because that argument is way too loud, I think, in the arena.
Okay.
Alrighty. So you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find all of our information, sponsorship, how to contact us, shows, all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. And you know, times like this, it's so unfortunate that we are on radio, because watching Bill try to get the headphones on his head.
It got tangled up. I'm sorry.
Just fun for everybody. Well, the
5 minutes and we still can't get it right.
I know. he got them all hooked up. Anyway, we're back again. We're chatting with Joe Gazzardi. He's the National Media Director for Californians for Population Stabilization, or CAPS, and their website is capsweb.org, before I forget again. And Bill has a brief commercial break.
Yes.
Hit it, Bill.
Well, Powerhouse Solar is our sponsor this hour. Powerhouse Solar is here in Redding, California, and they do all kinds of solar. Been here since 81, I think.
2003.
I keep saying 81.
That's my favorite part.
I know it.
I love doing this every week. We do it. There's somebody at home going, 2003.
Yeah, well, it's 2003, they're all about solar. So talk to Bruce and Sue over there.
Their phone number is
530-275-6500.
Okay, I can't get the phone number. You can't get the year. Okay, do it again. So try.
Well, you know what's easier is just go to powerhousesolar.com.
Oh, nice.
And you'll read all about them there.
And if you'd like us to butcher your advertisement, please feel free to
we'll
give
do it
us
for pennies
call.
On the dollar.
Yeah, please feel free
Not
to call.
A problem.
We love
yeah,
sponsors.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, big thank you to Powerhouse
we
Solar.
We are lunatics. It's really hot today. That's our problem. We had a big we had a climate shift. We're having global warming today. All right. So our guest, Joe Gazzardi, if you missed the first hour, you can catch it again when we put up the archive here in about an hour. But he's the National Media Director for Californians for Population Stabilization, speaking out on the importance of limiting U.S. immigration through sensible federal policies. That's sort of a heavy lift right there. As an immigration expert with, and I've updated it, 30 years of experience. Joe has been interviewed on national TV and radio programs in major California markets, including NBC, CBS, and Fox affiliates. He's all over the place. And you can find him at Joe Gazzardi at capsweb.org. And the last name is spelled G-U-Z-Z-A-R-D-I, just in case. Just in case spelling counts.
Thank you for that, Aaron.
Yeah, well, it's good for people to be able to get a hold of you guys. And you have a lot of information on your website. The capsweb.org site is great.
We have got all of the immigration-related topics are fair game for us, whether it's refugees or E-Verify or DACA or President Trump's kind of mixed record in his first 100 days. We opine on it.
Yeah, and see, that's a good way to do it. You know, rather than this ideological, let's not talk about the things that we don't like and, you know, spin it hard the other way. That's always a mess.
Yeah.
So do you think that, you know, some of this, obviously he's going to be there for 4 years, you know, not 100 days. So do you think he'll go back at some of this? Do you think it just became unwieldy at the very beginning?
There's no question that it's probably culture shock for Donald Trump to get into the quagmire that is Washington, D.C. politics, certain to be unlike anything that he ever experienced in the corporate world, and he's probably stupefied by the resistance that he's getting from the Democrats on every single thing that he mentions, even in passing. I'm sure that he anticipated that he wasn't going to get much cooperation, but it's comical how the Democrats are so unified in their resistance to everything that he proposes or even suggests that he might propose. And frankly, if I were Chuck Schumer and were looking ahead to 2018 and were making as many public appearances on television as he does, I would say that he might want to consider ways to appear to be more cooperative, you know, because the voters that the Democrats need to reach in 2018 are moderates, fence-sitters, and Schumer is out there pushing an extremely to-the-left agenda.
Well, they all are, and I agree 100%.
Yeah,
I think
right,
it's going to backfire, I think, in the midterms. Folks are
no doubt about it.
People are just getting fed up with the no to everything. And, you know, it's funny because the Republicans were the party of no. Well, I got to tell you, you're right. Every single breath he takes, they argue about it with.
Yeah.
And some of their arguments are ludicrous.
But some of their, well, besides the ludicrous, some of the arguments are exactly the opposite of what they used to say.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
That's the funny part. Yeah. I mean, they're right there on tape.
Saying the opposite 2 years ago,
yeah.
and now it's not okay.
But because everything is so crazy and there's so much of it, people believe a lot of it. It's extremely difficult to get factual information. You know, you read things that are kind of crazy and you think that can't be real, can it? And some of it's real, some of it's not.
Yeah.
Well, no. Another interesting example that has parallels are the all of these. Pro-amnesty marches that the immigration advocacy groups put on. Now, tomorrow, May Day, there are going to be marches across the country of, you know, illegal immigrants and their lobby demanding amnesty and, you know, to stop breaking up families and all of those cliches that we're so familiar with. But again, you have people that in the United States that are on the fence about immigration. You know, they think on one hand, they say, well, good people come to the United States, want to work, raise families, better opportunities for their children. Okay. But then those same people also say, well, you know, they did come voluntarily. They do have free public education for their kids. They do get driver's licenses in a lot of states. They do get college subsidized tuition.
And in California, they're getting medical. They're getting medical insurance
medical.
In California.
Yeah. So those people see people out in the streets raising banners and making demands, and they say, you know, that kind of turns me off. So that's why, you know, immigration reform, amnesties, and those kinds of things always seem like such a good idea on Capitol Hill. But when you get back to the local districts, to the local congressional districts, a lot of times these representatives get a rude awakening of just how unpopular types of legislation.
Yeah, and it's aren't. Not, you know, don't get me wrong, it's not just the Democrats that I think are going to get an awakening. If you know, I think if the Republicans don't get it together and start putting up a unified front here, it could be a real shocker for them as well in the midterms.
Yeah.
And it's
That is definitely a risk. I mean, they have to realize just what you're saying, Bill, that there's got to be some kind of a unified front, because otherwise, then it's just complete gridlock, and that's maybe the thing that people are the most frustrated by,
mm-hmm.
is the inability to get anything
sure.
done.
Well, we're kind of at that weird point, because in the Senate, we've changed two big precedents. You know, you only need now a simple majority to confirm a Supreme Court justice and to mm-hmm. appoint a cabinet member, and it used to be 60. So now we're looking
right.
at the precedent is legislation requires 60 to move it to a vote. And I don't know, do we drop that to a simple majority? If we do, then a lot of stuff could get done.
Well, I think
but
you
boy,
do because
it's scary.
If
place.
The administration turns again in 4 years,
yeah,
they're going to change it back and go with a simple majority. So, it, what difference does it make? I just think they need to start. Well, it's like his cabinet picks.
Needs some points on the board.
Yeah, he needs to get some folks in positions to start getting some of these departments straightened out and get some work done.
Well, you have all the. You know, he's the captain of the good ship bureaucracy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And man,
and he's just getting shut down.
Well, did I read that he has only got some infinitesimally small percentage of appointees?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like 20-some appointees out of 1,100, I think
it's 1,200 plus.
1,200 plus
well,
that need to get
interestingly enough, I was speaking with someone last week, and they said that the people left over from the Obama administration are running full tilt. And in the last 5 years, they have increased the number of bureaucrats in the Forest Service at the Washington, D.C., end, not on the ground out here, but in Washington, D.C. They have five times more employees than they used to have 5 years ago.
Wow.
So,
no, I'm not really
the trees
sure.
must really be growing.
That.
They're making like a kingdom back there.
They have all these Obama holdovers. Why can't they get rid of them? Certainly, it can't be that hard to find 1,000 people in the United States that would be on board with President Trump that have at least fundamentally the qualifications.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, it isn't.
I don't
it
think
isn't
it's the
concept. I mean, when you start looking at it, if you're the new Secretary of whatever, I mean, you just got there to go through and figure out who knows what they're doing, who doesn't, who's good, who's bad. And who you can trust more than, I guess I should put that at the top of the list.
I mean, wouldn't the automatic assumption be that if you're an Obama holdover, you're a person that the new guy doesn't want around?
But see, not really, because now shift over to VA. And Secretary Shulkin was the number two under McDonald in the Obama administration. But Shulkin is a great guy. All the whistleblowers that I've dealt with over the years, they love that guy. He's a get-it-done guy who brings in people who actually want to make change. He brought up as his number two a guy that was also in the Obama administration, came from private industry. And these guys are doing a great job. So you look at it and it's like, well, it's not an automatic criteria. You know?
Yeah, I see that.
It really complicates.
It's tricky. And then too, you know, it'd be like if you bought a new business. I mean, we all know this in private industry. If you bought a new business, you can't just run in and fire all the old employees because, like, they actually know how to do stuff. You know, you still have
to. Yeah, I see that point. Maybe I was thinking more along the lines of anybody in the administration, anybody from the Obama administration dealing with immigration issues.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, clean it out.
It's interesting, though. I mean, you really have to figure out.
Right.
The name of the game right now is who your friends are, who's informed, who's not, you know, who's an ideologue, and who actually wants to get things
that's
done.
That's where a lot of these leaks are coming from, is all these embedded holdovers.
Making that change is
it's daunting.
Taking time. But so I think we'll see a lot of things happen in the future, but in the meantime, it's interesting. I was listening the other night on my way to a meeting, and they had said that the last administration was just, if you looked at overall media, 89% of the media coverage of Obama was favorable, and they finished doing like the calculations, and they said it's kind of spooky, but 89% of the Trump coverage is negative.
Yeah,
I saw that same analysis.
Did you see that?
Well, of course, that doesn't help. That doesn't help Trump either, except among the people that make up his base. Everybody knows that the media is predetermined against him. And it's interesting because immediately after the election, the big media guns, I'm thinking specifically of the New York Times, said, oh, you know, we missed this so badly, we promise now going forward to do more thoughtful analysis, and if anything,
the
coverage of Trump
it's worse
after his election than it was before.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point, because it's the same folks that predicted you know, Hillary was going to win by a landslide, were totally wrong. And now these same folks are still right in the media. So do you trust them? I mean, do you think they're going to, you know, they're telling you the truth?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, that's the problem. And that's all people hear. So when they hear that, oh, Trump's failing and he's not getting anything done, well, you know what? Eh, not necessarily true. That's just what they want you to believe.
Right.
So it's very confusing. Very confusing right now.
Very tricky. Well, what you guys at CAPS, what is... Oh, sorry. We have to take a quick break. That's why we had to come on a new topic. We were at that point where we had to shift.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we come back, we'll talk about whatever you want.
Yeah,
how's
we'll talk
that?
About the wall, too.
What about?
Where is it?
Bill. See if we can keep the headphones on Bill during the break, and that'll be my greatest lift of the day. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. It was a time when strangers were welcome. Music would play, they tell me the days were sweet and clear. It was a sweeter tune, and there was so much room.
I just saw a unicorn run by.
Is that a rainbow?
Everywhere. Yeah. Oh, look at the puppy.
So I guess when we felt like we had lots of room, we didn't care how many people showed up, but now we do.
Yeah.
Is that does that have any validity, Joe? bring us back. We gave ourselves diabetes. The sweetness of that song was overwhelming.
Oh yeah, you guys always have great music on the break.
Hey, so Joe, talk to me about the wall. You think they'll ever do anything there?
The wall is going to be tough for President Trump. There's a lot of ingrained resistance among Republicans, as we were just saying, and certainly unanimous resistance among Democrats, and you're going to have California environmental groups chiming in against it. So it's going to be a tough sell, and that's another reason why I think that Trump should get back to the things that he can do that are more easily attainable and more easily done. You know, we talked a little before about E-Verify and DACA, but just identify things that can be done. The wall's going to be a tough sell for him. Now, he probably put himself in a bad place by making it such a cornerstone of his campaign. It certainly was a reason that a lot of people voted for him. I mean, let's face it, Trump got elected on his immigration platform, not really so much on repeal and replace Obamacare and not so much on his foreign policy views, but really because people, not just people in border states, but people across the United States want to see a more common sense approach to immigration, and we just don't see that.
Well, I think they also want to feel a little safer with all the folks coming in, and I think he's tried to do that, but
we'll see. But that's where Jeff Sessions comes in, though.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, we finally have somebody in the big chair of Law and Order who actually cares about Law and Order.
But I don't think he was counting on all these judges blocking everything he's tried to do.
Judges have previously established history of ruling against the law. I mean, the refugee ban or temporary pause, whatever you want to call it, that's very clear that the president has the authority to do that. Sanctuary cities, the same thing. And those two, I suspect, will eventually end up in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I anticipate that there'll be wins for President Trump. But what I would do in the meantime, and this is easily done, I believe, just Trump can call in the Department of Homeland Security Chief John Kelly and say, look, I don't know how many ICE agents you normally send to San Francisco, but I'm going to ask you to please double or triple the number of agents that you send into there to, you know, just say, okay, look, there are things that we can do that are going to reinforce our commitment to immigration law and see what happens.
Do you think, I don't think that's a bad idea, but could San Francisco really do anything about that if a bunch of ICE agents all of a sudden?
Well, I don't know how. I mean, first of all, the consequences of that for Trump are really zero. He can't be more maligned
right
in California and in San Francisco than he already is.
No.
You've got the president of the Senate, Kevin De Leon, the California Senate, calling him a white supremacist.
Yeah, the guy admitted his family came here illegally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all stole other people's identities.
And the guy who said, you know, really, if it weren't for identity theft, my family wouldn't have been able to stay here.
There's a lawmaker.
Yeah, but said, it's just what you have to do.
Yeah.
It's just cookie crumbles.
Yeah, don't worry about the law. We just got to break it, and then we'll move on.
I would recommend that just more vigorous enforcement. And that all brings us to the question of where is California going to go with the sanctuary state bill, which I guess is, it's already passed the Senate, I forget what they call it, the California Values Act or something like that, the bill that would theoretically block ICE from any area of California, schools, hospitals, all of it. So what's going to happen if it passes the assembly and gets to Jerry Brown's desk? Does he sign it or does he not sign it?
Yeah, because you're drawing some pretty heavy battle lines at that point.
What do you guys think he'll do?
Bill, you go first.
I think he'll sign. Jerry Brown, I think he'll sign it in a heartbeat. He just isn't a guy that's really got much use for the federal government, unless, of course, he has a broken dam or something he needs money for. But no, I think he'll sign it. He has. I mean, look what he did with the gas tax, the vehicle registration.
My sense of it is that it's probable that he would sign it, but I don't think it's by any means a slam dunk. I mean, he's trying to lean on Donald Trump for, what is it, $100 billion for infrastructure repairs?
Mm-hmm.
So he, on the one hand, he went to Trump for money for the Orville Dam, and he got it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trump accommodated him on that. And now he wants $100 billion for infrastructure repairs. And is it possible that he would be so defiant as to say, look, I'll take your money, but you can take your politics and, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd almost wager money that he will. He's got, yeah, he's...
Well,
not squaring ahead.
They're not letting go of the drought because they don't.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they're still talking about drought. Good grief!
Yeah. I don't know. There would be ways that Jerry Brown could explain away a veto. I mean, first of all, he could say, "Look, you've already basically got a sanctuary state here. You've got the Trust Act, and last year,
what's the Trust Act?
John Culberson, the chairman of the U.S. House Appropriations Committee, met with Loretta Lynch, you know, to talk about these sanctuaries and what needs to be done and who's in violation and who isn't. They agreed, Lynch agreed with Culberson, that California was already a sanctuary state because of its existing policies. So Brown could say, if he wanted to, if he felt any need to defend himself, and why, when you think about it, why would he really feel a need to defend himself? He's a lame duck. He's already given California's illegal immigrants everything there is to give them. So he just said, look, you've got the Trust Act. We need to cooperate with the federal government because we're trying to get $100 billion for them so that you can have better roads and safer bridges and dams that hold up. You know, he could do it.
Mm. God, yeah, how depressing. And I'm kind of curious, you know, I mean, California's always the, you know, leading the way toward the big deep hole, but are there any other states that are this screwed up? I think New York's probably trying to get in.
Yeah, New York is in really a really bad way. You know, they have Bill de Blasio there as the mayor, and they have an extremely liberal governor, Cuomo. Now, you know, de Blasio created a municipal ID card for New York City's illegal immigrants. And, of course, to get the card, they had to fill out certain information on their forms. And now de Blasio, kind of afraid of Trump and deportations and ICE, is ordering that all of the information, that all of those forms be destroyed. You know, clearly a violation mm-hmm. of federal law to destroy public records. So is New York as far gone as California? I mean, I don't know. The way I look at California always is, okay, we've got roughly 40 million residents in California, approximately. And there are approximately 3 million illegal immigrants in California. So the ratio of citizens to illegal immigrants is like 13 to 1. You know, you've got 40 million residents in total. 36 of them are citizens. 3 million of them are illegal aliens. Ratio of 13 to 1 citizens to illegal aliens. Yet all of the legislation, or much of the legislation that comes out of the Sacramento, is acts, bills that improve the lives of illegal immigrants. So how incomprehensible is that?
Totally incomprehensible. I mean, and then you look at all the
prison. You would think, I mean, if you were just a casual observer, you know, and you read the Sacramento Bee, and
yeah, mental note, don't move there.
They keep electing these people.
Yeah. Yeah, and for all those of you out there that think term limits are the answer, oh yeah, we already have that. This is literally being done by the voters to themselves. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the voting thing, because we haven't hit on that yet, but with our motor voter laws and all that jazz, I'll be curious to see what your organization thinks, how much of this is being driven by illegal aliens at the polls. Hey, sure. We'll be right back with Joe Gazzardi. More stuff on immigration. It's not a super happy topic, but it is super important. So switch to decaf and we'll get through it.
Traveling far without a home, but not without a star. Free, only one will be free. We huddle close and hang on to on the boats and on the planes, they're coming to America, never looking back again. They're coming to America. Home, don't it seem so far away? We're traveling light today, in the eye of the storm, in the eye of the storm. Home to a new and a shiny place, make our bed and we'll say our grace. Freedom's light burning warm, freedom's light burning warm.
So tonight, yourself. Groove. Let the medicine, the music get to you. Life ain't so bad at all. You live it off the wall.
Little wall song there for you.
Heck yeah.
Kind of snuck up on me. I didn't see that coming.
That could employ some people for a long time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay, Joe, with those stats, if one out of 13 in California is an illegal alien, but it seems like 99% of our policies are geared toward that those folks, they're kind of taking the same tack that the LGBT guys have taken in California.
Oh yeah, if you listen to the media, you'd think if you live in California, you're either LGBT or illegal because that's the only people that live here.
I mean, it is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's weird, and
on
although although it's hard for us to admit it. I mean, these guys, the LGB guys and the illegal aliens, they've done a fantastic job of selling their agenda to the media. And, you know, we always say people, you know, my friends at Numbers USA and FAIR and Center for Immigration Studies, we're always saying, well, God, you know, how have they been so successful? And how can we at least begin to approach the success that we've had? Well, of course, it's hard. When they've already sold out to the other side, but that's the problem. I can't remember. I think I read this on the Public Policy of California, Public Policy Institute of California, but of possible voters in California. In other words, of those voters in California that are of age. Only like half of them are registered to vote. And of those half that are registered to vote, only like 30% of them show up to vote. Now, I don't know, it's been a while since I read that, so maybe the numbers have changed a little bit. But basically, I think that somehow reflects one of California's big problems. You know, we know for a fact that not everybody in California is on board with Jerry Brown's agenda or with Kamala Harris's agenda or Dianne Feinstein's agenda. But is there a sense among the voters that, well, you know, what's the point really, since in the end it always works out for them and not for us?
Well, I think it really shows more than anything else who's the most active and the most organized and who's, you know, really pressing their point, because you got the populations in the big cities in California that are kind of steering the boat right now, or folks like Pelosi and Feinstein. I mean,
right.
They'd never get elected if you took that vote out of the cities. Yeah. They'd be
gone. That would never work.
Well, again, same kind of thing. There's, I forget now exactly what it is, but 55 or 56 counties in California, and the majority, a comfortable majority of them, are Republican, vote mm-hmm. Republican. But, you know, that's not L.A. County or San Francisco or San Jose, where all of the big Democratic votes are found. So it's hard. It's hard.
Well, you start looking at things like, you know, the abuse of our tax dollars, and then they decided, well, you know, we are going to have to fix our roads, so, well, hey, we'll just have a gas tax.
Yeah, it's 25 cents a gallon or something.
No, 12 cents on the base tax, so they think they're going to get an extra $52 billion to cover the state's transportation needs.
Yeah, and
But there's already all sorts of stuff out there that they're already siphoning it off to do other things.
And don't forget the vehicle registration that went up $150 per vehicle in California that is now in effect.
Do you think there's any truth to the theory that the gas tax might also be in part anticipation of withheld funds from the federal government? You know,
Sure.
Well,
they've pushed all these electric vehicles and done all these rebates and all this stuff. So,
well, they don't want to give up on their bullet train either. And it looks like the federal funding on that is going to go away. And I truly believe that when the well finally goes dry on the bullet train, they'll give up on it. But as long as there's money being pumped into it, they're going to keep siphoning that off, and a lot of people are going to get rich. But mark my words, that train will never roll down the rails. It just can't.
No, and it's been clear for years that it would never roll down the rails, right?
No.
I mean, this is.
But they keep spending money on
it. Revelation.
No.
Pardon me?
They're still spending money, and they're still
buying
property,
I mean,
it's crazy. But they won't give up on the idea, because the folks that are getting paid to analyze and
sure.
They're making millions of dollars off the taxpayers.
I'm going to put a link on the website. I was just looking up exactly what the gas tax was. Base excise tax is 18 cents a gallon. Price-based excise tax is currently set at 9.8 cents a gallon for a total rate of 27.8 cents
per gallon. Yeah, that's
what I heard.
Our total tax now is it's crazy.
In November of 27, the base excise tax will increase to 30 cents a gallon. And in July 2019, it'll reset to 17.3. supposedly, but by then they'll think of something else.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure that'll be reflected in the price of gas.
But average revenue, $2.4 billion.
Yeah, just on gas.
And it goes through a whole bunch of other stuff. Where's the money going to go? And all that. It's actually a pretty good. It's a pretty good article. And then I look at this, and it's if we didn't have all of these illegal aliens and paying for all the the Medicaid and all that stuff. Has your organization done any, quick math on where we'd be now if we weren't spending that kind of money?
Well, we haven't done any quick math officially, but we have kind of ongoing math that shows that continuing to pour money into, for example, diversity programs at University of California, Berkeley, when the state is facing a $1.5 billion deficit by, mid-June or early July, and has the wall of debt $450 billion. I mean, it doesn't make a bit of sense to anybody at any education level. You just simply can't say, well, this is a good use of your money. But
this
it's
is
always...
Good sound fiscal policy.
Kind of thing. Well, we realize short term it might seem to be something we can't afford, but over the long term it's going to pay off huge benefits because we'll have
really long term. like 200 years down the road, we'll be better off.
Yeah.
Yeah, this article is a California gas tax increase and how it benefits you.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put benefits you in quotes.
That must have been a San Francisco Chronicle story.
Zach B.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at with that kind of a deficit in what you say June or July, $2 billion increase in gas tax isn't even going to crack that even or a point where you'd even notice it. Well, even $2 billion sounds like a lot of money.
So
and it is, but.
Well, so let's just say that we popped in E-Verify at the federal level. Could California try to opt out of that? Is that possible?
No, it wouldn't be possible. I mean, if E-Verify is mandatory, if it's federal law, then California couldn't opt out of it. Although now that I'm thinking very quickly, I suppose it's possible that there could be some lawsuit,
to stall it.
Unconstitutional or something like that. But if memory serves me correctly, Jerry Brown at one time was for E-Verify when he was, what were the jobs?
Before he was against it?
When he was Attorney General, maybe? I can't remember. But it's at some point, he was for it. And then, you know, once elected governor, I think California had it to some extent, or maybe that was secure communities. I can't remember. But
well,
anyway, if it were a federal law, no, he could not opt out of it.
I was wondering about that because, you know, they're ignoring ICE and all the rest of it. And then, you know, it strikes me that if E-Verify were to be passed on a federal level, we'd be a hop, skip, and a jump from requiring driver's licenses to vote, you know, identification to vote.
Right. That's
a whole nother problem.
Yeah,
but,
that,
I mean, that,
that's craziness.
I would, if I were against having identification to vote, which I'm not, but if I were, the E-Verify thing would seem, you know, like a big chip out of my current wall that keeps, you know, that keeps verification out. That seems like that'd
you know,
be an easy thing to do.
Voter ID is very important, especially in light of some of these extremely close elections that have been held over the last several election cycles, you know, where people have only won by a very narrow
right.
percentage of votes. I mean, even, you know, even in the last election where Trump won by a thin margin in Wisconsin and Michigan and the third state, I can't remember, Pennsylvania,
yeah.
So, you know, it's logical to expect voters to have to identify themselves, but lack of logic seems to prevail on that argument as well. But even for the weakest kinds of reasons, you know, that it's racist to ask for ID. I mean, states have offer IDs for non-drivers, so what would stop a person who doesn't drive from going to DMV, from getting to DMV at some point during a calendar year and getting an ID card?
Exactly.
I mean, it's hard to argue.
Well, you can't buy, you know, beer, you can't rent a car. You
can't buy cigarettes in California without ID now.
Yeah.
No matter how old you are.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
No. Yeah, you got to have an ID.
So you can pay all the, what, $4 extra per pack?
Yeah, a guy I work with bought 3 packs of cigarettes the other day. It was $25. He fell on the floor. It's like, wow.
Time to quit the cigarettes. All right, we're going to take a really quick break. Take a quick smoke break, huh?
Yeah, I'm smoking sitting
just
right
go ahead,
here.
Just go ahead and roll up the money and smoke it. It's so much faster. You save a trip to the store, and you don't need a license for that. And it costs the same. We'll be back with our friend Joe Gazzardi. Finish up the hour on immigration. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And know that notion just crossed my mind.
Don't watch my lips, where were you born?
I was born in East L.A.
You're born in East L.A. Well, let's see your green card, huh?
Green card? I'm from East L.A.
All right, well, then who's president of the United States?
Oh, that's easy, man. That guy that used to be on Death Valley days, John Wayne.
All right, let's go. Come on.
Next thing I know, I'm in a foreign land.
Ah, the good old days.
Remember we used to joke about that?
Yeah. Yeah, boy, Bob, you're kind of going on the racist deal
that's
there.
Awesome,
that's
awesome, Bob.
Man, Cheech and Chong.
It's still funny all day.
Have we triggered you yet?
Yeah, all those people that were switching to decaf are like, whoo!
Oh, dodged man.
Dodged the bullet
there. I'd smoke them if I had them, but I can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, I was looking that up, too. Some brands of cigarettes are almost $10 a pack.
Yeah, I
just
like to have a pack a day habit.
I think in New York City, they're already at that level and have been for a while.
Yeah, yeah. New York's been a big... Well, that's
so racist.
Where that guy got clobbered for selling singles on the street, I think
oh,
they call
that's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
right.
You're going to start seeing that in
Lucy's,
California.
They call them.
Oh, that's right. Lucy's. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, unbelievable.
For heaven's sakes.
Yeah. It's a thriving industry.
The madness. So,
well, I'm going to end on a on a high note.
Ooh, that's a lot of pressure.
I am confident that, you know, 100 days is really not enough time for Trump to settle in and to do the things that he wants to do on immigration. He's got a great right-hand man there in Jeff Sessions, and I expect that Sessions has got Trump's ear and that he's going to say, look, in the meantime, while we're waiting for all of these court cases to be resolved, we need to continue to step up enforcement, especially in areas like Long Island, where they have the MS-13 gang running crazy. And I think that Trump might change his mind on DACA. There's going to be a lot of people telling him that his base is extremely disappointed on the magnitude of that very major failure to convert a campaign promise into a reality.
Right.
So I'm looking for better things from Trump soon.
Well, I think you're right on target with Sessions, too. I think he's going to not going to be very popular, but I think he definitely has the ability to turn it back into a country of laws, and we're going to start following the laws. And you can't,
I mean,
you can't argue with it.
If, it's probably no longer available, but when he was an Alabama senator, on his website, he had these tremendous breakouts of facts and figures and what was actually going on immigration, whether it was border crossings or violations of the immigration law in the interior, and he's certainly the most knowledgeable guy in Washington, D.C. on immigration from our perspective. So thankfully, Trump picked him to be attorney general and did not settle for, you know, what might have been perceived as a more politically correct choice.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't realize he had that much background in immigration. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he's been a long-standing ally of immigration enforcement, and you know, it would be great to see Chris Kobach, who's currently the Secretary of State in Kansas, but another guy who's done a lot of work on the importance of enforcement. And you know, if nothing else, the border crossings are way, way down, and that's huge. And the signal that's being sent across the border and overseas is that immigration laws in the United States are now going to be enforced. So come at your own risk.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, obviously having a big impact, and will continue to have an impact. And he doesn't have to write any legislation. He just has to say it.
Yeah, just enforce the law in the books.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bill, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Brown does not sign that bill.
Okay, we're going to have you back on.
Nice. We got one for, one against.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Remember where you heard it.
I'll hold the money.
I would not be shocked if he did. But
yeah, yeah.
The madness. The madness has no limits. So let's see. Let's get your information back out there again. Joe is with Californians for Population Stabilization, CAPS, C-A-P-S. Their website is capsweb.org.
Thanks for coming on, Joe.
Thanks a million, Joe.
Thank you very much. It was really good fun to be with you guys. And even though the topic is dreary, being on your show is not. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have to do dreary topics in a fun way. Otherwise, well, we're just like everybody
else.
Well,
we're going to have you back inside of a year. I mean, that was too long. So we'll have you back again.
There's going to be a lot going on. Please keep us posted, will you?
Oh, for sure.
All right.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks a million. You've been listening to We the People. You can find all the information about us at wethepeopleradio.us.